And you got to keep fighting the feeling, the doom and gloom feeling. The doom and gloom feeling. And you got to keep fighting the feeling. The doom and gloom feeling.
Hello and welcome to episode number 97 of It's Never Sunny in Seattle, a Seattle Mariners baseball podcast. We are riding the high of what was an 8-game win streak. The Mariners are competing in the AL West. We never thought we would see the day. And joined to talk about it is my good friend, Mikey. Mikey, how have you experienced this win streak?
It's been really fun. And really unexpected. I think maybe yesterday after the game when they won, it was like they're on an 8-game heater. And I was like, what? Like, I thought that they won like, you know, maybe four or five straight.
You thought you were receiving old news because we just got off of another 8-game heater.
We're allergic to losing now.
It's incredible. Joined as well to talk to us about the Mariners winning ways is Day.
Go Mariners.
There we go.
Eight games. I'm glad the Mariners were away during the wildfire smoke.
Because
it was pretty bad this past week.
You don't want another Kyle Lewis sketch?
Dude, I played softball. Mikey flaked on the game.
Yeah.
We got demolished.
And, it's because Mikey wasn't there.
Mikey wasn't there. Stretching Mike. A triple on a single. Even though we're up 15, that's Mikey's game. I regret it, man. I'm still like coughing and stuff. It was not a smart move.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully our beloved Mariners are staying healthy and staying very clear of the wildfire smoke here in Seattle, but they will be coming back to town this Friday. But joining us as well on this episode, a very special episode, we are joined by Jordan Schusterman. He is an MLB analyst for Fox Sports and one half of the Baseball Barbacast, which can be found on SiriusXM Podcast Network. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us. It must have been a huge couple of weeks for you, mainly because of the Mariners winning ways, but of course you got married. So congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It was quite the stretch and, you know, really relevant to my Mariners fan for a couple of reasons. First of all, thank you guys so much for having me on. Very happy to be here. But it was an interesting run because two of the only Mariners losses over the last few weeks came during my wedding weekend against the Baltimore Orioles, the favorite team of my podcast co-host Jake Mintz, who I've been making baseball stuff with for 10 years. Mm. And so we got to not watch those games together because I was busy getting married, which is kind of great, which means I've really only like today was only like the second Mariners loss I've watched in 3.5 weeks. So it's been pretty cool.
No Mariners baseball on wedding night?
Not exactly. We did. I got married on a Sunday. So the Friday we got to watch the blowout with Castillo look great. And that was all fun, but no, it was great. I guess today was the first Mariners loss as a married person, or maybe I guess the second, cause I guess that first Royals disaster was a little bit different, but yes, it's been a fun stretch. It's been a nice, couple weeks for me in, you know, on planet Earth.
Yes, I'm very happy to hear that. I'm pretty sure legally in the standings, those losses don't count if they happened when you were still in the afterglow of your wedding. I'm going to write to Rob Manfred right now, and I'm pretty sure we can have those annulled. So some housekeeping items up top before we get into more Mariner talk. You can join our Discord with the link that we will post along with this show when we send it out on Twitter. And you can also join our Patreon if you feel so compelled. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/neversunnyinseattle. And one last thing we want to plug, we have a line where you can call in and leave questions for us on our voicemail. You might even be greeted with a very special message. You're going to have to call in and find out. That number to do so is 267.
Isaiah Campbell rejected it.
Oh, shit.
We tried to get a cameo, Jordan.
We tried to get Isaiah Campbell to record our voicemail.
I knew he wouldn't do it. I feel like there's legal things where he's not allowed to do that, but it would have been great just to have
Isaiah.
It's
definitely
not
worth the $10 he was charging.
Damn.
It's worth more is what I meant. He should be charging more.
We got to ask Paul.
Okay, well, you'll have to just hear Day's voice receiving you on our voicemail line, but that number is 267-MARINER. If you would like to call in, leave us your questions, comments, anything you would like to talk about pertaining to the Mariners or life. So, Jordan, I had a question about your Mariners fandom. You cover and write about baseball on a national level now, but it seems like you're still pretty attached to your Mariners fandom. And I'm wondering how your Mariners viewership kind of waxes and wanes along with the team's fortunes. And at what point are the Mariners doing well enough where you decide, like, okay, I'm going to tune into this game over, you know, some other game I might be interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I opted into this fandom 10 years ago, basically, a little more than 10 years ago, when they were ass, right? So, like, I was choosing to watch terrible versions of the team.
And God bless you for doing
Yeah, which again, like, and that's the thing. It kind of, I've talked to Mikey about this before, but last year was such an incredible experience, obviously, but it was weird for me, right? Like, I had no ownership of the drought. I didn't grow up in Seattle or Mariners fan. Like, I just kind of picked them because Felix was my favorite pitcher, and I just enjoyed the Mariners vibes for whatever reason, even before Eugenio Suarez was there. And so I chose it though, right? And so it's like on one hand, it's like, no, I don't have carried the same weight of the fandom. On the other hand, it's like, oh no, like, I actually picked this, and so I deserve some credit in that sense. But as for your question, it's been interesting. I mean, I'm very lucky to follow and write about and cover baseball for a living, so that I get to be doing baseball all the time. Now, how much time I'm devoting that to the Mariners has definitely kind of fluctuated, especially as baseball has become my full-time job. But I maintain that even as I've gotten to do this full-time, like, it's still a very important part of me as a baseball observer. And I don't really want to lose that. I know a lot of people who kind of go into journalism and cover, whether they're beat writers or whether they're baseball writers or national writers, they say, oh yeah, you know, I eventually lose my fandom. And I'm like, I hope not, because for me, like, that's kind of why any of us ever start doing any of this. And so I think there is a way to balance that, but it certainly has been an interesting experience, certainly last season, and then again this year with the how it started and now where we're at right now.
Yeah, that explanation is like catnip to fans who grew up Mariners fans because of, like, geographic proximity or because of their parents or whatever. The fact that you're saying you came from an outside perspective and there's something that you just, like, latched onto about the team, you have no idea how nice that is to hear. Because sometimes, you know, you think that about the team you grew up rooting for, but then to hear somebody who kind of joined it on their own say that, you know, it's very validating. So,
sure. I mean at sometimes I still feel weird. I still feel like an outsider. I don't feel like I'm worthy of kind of being a part of it. But I've been very lucky that people like you guys have been so welcoming. And listen, none of it's that serious. But right. Like, truly, it has been very cool to be a real kind of part of, but also because I don't live there and because I can opt in and out, like, I can kind of step back and be like, you know what, I don't need to do this for a couple of days. I don't need to engage. And I made the decision to make my own Twitter account. I mean, Jake and I were, you know, had joint accounts. Mm-hmm. We've been running on Cespedes BBQ for 7 years or 8 years before we made our own Twitter accounts. And the main reason why I made my own was so that I could tweet more about just the Mariners. Like, that was the whole point. Yeah. And so that has been both very fun and made me see a lot of tweets that I don't want to see. Mm-hmm. so it's been kind of goes both ways there, but it's all part of it. I can't complain.
I still can't believe that you willingly chose the Mariners, knowing their history and the, you know, the drought. And that was a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, well, the point I've made many times is I know I obviously doesn't go back to 2001 for me, but the Mariners postseason drought from the time I started rooting for them was still longer than every other team. Mm-hmm. Like, even once I started in, you know, 2010, 2011. So it's not like I wasn't, you know, quote unquote sports suffering like everybody else. So. But it is interesting. It's been an interesting group to kind of go with. And to be honest, I think a big part of it too is that, especially since I started, you know, this with Jay 10 years ago and just in general, like, I don't really have other sports. I don't have another team in any other sport at all. Like, I watch other sports, but I do not have another favorite team at all. So, like, this is where the energy goes, for better or for worse.
All right. Well, the fandom is lucky to have you. You had 29 other MLB teams you could have picked, and you chose the Mariners. one of those other possible teams might have been like, I don't know, like the White Sox, for instance. Oy. And I have a sense that you're feeling pretty glad about that choice right now anyway. I want to bring up the fact that the White Sox leadership just ousted Ken Williams, their executive vice president, and Rick Hahn, their senior vice president, after the 14-2 loss that the Mariners delivered then. And I'm not going to try to like frame this as like the Mariners beat them so bad that their, you know, VPs got fired.
Unless.
But I am going to make the argument that if the White Sox would have won that day, do you guys think it would have extended their tenure at least one more day? I feel like you can't make a move like that after a win. That's like a break glass in case of an emergency type move. And you kind of...
It was a blowout, right? It was a blowout, right?
Yeah, it was. So, Day, I'll maybe let you just quick yes or no. If the White Sox win that game, do those two moves happen?
It reminded me of like a football move. Like we see that type of firing happen after like a huge blowout loss. Mm. Head coach gets fired. I mean, there's 16 weeks, 17 weeks compared to how many games. But yeah. The White Sox PR has been pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then that blowout, everyone's paying attention to the Mariners right now. Yeah, I think it probably expedited the process for sure.
Mikey, do you feel the same way?
Probably. Listen, I think it's like, is it the opposite or the same as the Colton Wong home run? Like, I really think it bought him a couple extra days.
Can we leave my boy alone? How long?
Colton Wong's going to do something for the Dodgers in September. Just watch.
I was just thinking about that yesterday.
It's the worst case scenario for me. I grew up a Giants fan. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I've been rooting for this guy. Giants have been overperforming, in my opinion. I don't know. I feel like their luck's about to run out, though. Colton Wong's about to contribute to this World Series contender. This is terrible.
And we'll be happy to see him do it until the Mariners meet up with the Dodgers in the World Series.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we're rooting for Colton. We always have. Please go find success somewhere, especially since it's in the National League. In the press release that the White Sox sent out with this move, I just saw one short quote from Jerry Reinsdorf. He said, "Ken is like a son to me." I don't really want us to spend any time on that. I just wanted to put that out into the universe. It's a very uncomfortable thing to include in a press release where you're firing somebody. It's like, Ken is like a son to me, a son which I have let go.
I mean, he's been there for 30 plus years. Like, that's the whole problem, right?
Yeah.
He's basically admitting how they ended up in this mess to begin with. Because you talk about, if they hadn't blown him out then, maybe he's 6. No. These guys have been on borrowed time in terms of deserving to be running this team for years. I mean, this is the fact that they were even able to conduct another draft and trade all their pitchers away for prospect, like, and Jake Berger for some reason, none of that made any sense. So the timing was, there was no correct way, but also every day was the correct day for this to happen.
Excellent point. But
to your point, like, yep, definitely glad I'm not a White Sox fan. So that's pretty cool.
Great. Okay, one other topic that is right at the top of our minds. On the most recent episode of Baseball Barbacast, you had a chat with your co-host Jake about Luke Weaver, a pitcher the Mariners just recently picked up from the Reds on the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. And you speculated that Luke Weaver might really blossom in Seattle. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were equal parts excited and upset to see someone that had such high potential, you know, go elsewhere. So today I would just like to mention Luke Weaver got into his first Mariners game, pitched 2 innings, 5 strikeouts, no hits on, I think, 24 pitches.
He looked fucking
damn.
So, fucking Jordan, good. Your chickens have come home to roost. How do you feel about Luke Weaver as a Mariner?
No, this is great. I said it like if you listen to that at the end of the show today, I wasn't going to force Jake to listen to me talk about Luke Weaver for 5 minutes. And then here I am on this pod, so we can go for 20 minutes about Luke Weaver. This is great.
Thank you.
So here's the thing. And I really want, this is a great example of like, you know, I can set the stage narratively, but I really do want Mikey's opinion on this, especially because like, for me, as someone who's been going to Reds games, I live in Indiana. I've been covering the Reds are the closest MLB park that I have. And Luke Weaver has been essentially a punchline this season. But I've remembered the whole time I've probably been at six or seven of his starts as he's just getting blasted left and right. I remembered that was the first move. They claimed Luke Weaver during the World Series last year. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was during the World Series. And it was like, what? Like, there are so few transactions that happen, obviously, in the postseason, but especially during the World Series. Like, you're not even supposed to do that. Like, the league tells you don't do this. Like, you're not supposed to be making. And obviously, free agency isn't open, but the waiver wire is still open. And so for whatever reason, they clearly had identified him at some point. Gets squeezed off the roster by the middle of the winter, and then the Reds sign him. And yeah, he apparently was intent on giving starting one final go, and he got that chance, and it did not go well. So, but I can imagine, because we've heard stories about this. I know this is a classic thing that, you know, DePoto's going to flex all the time, but I also totally believe him. He said this publicly, where basically, when pitchers are free agents, whether it's in the offseason or they're on, you know, maybe they get DFA, like, they'll go to the Mariners and be like, whatever you want me to do, like, let's do it. Like, I want to come here because everyone who comes here, you know, gets better. And that's something that other teams have had that reputation for. But it's taken a little bit of while for I feel like the national audience to kind of recognize this. But I feel like we're finally starting to get there, specifically with the bullpen that they've built this year. Obviously, I think Seawald went a long way to kind of get that into the spotlight as far as what the Mariners pitching development has been able to do. But today was just, I mean, I was just laughing at every pitch. I mean, it was just, he's throwing this cutter that he'd only be barely thrown in Cincinnati. And they clearly just, as you've said, Mikey, about some other guys, just like, here, just like spam this pitch. It'll work. And then you're great. And it's just so funny. It's so funny.
I really wonder, because I don't necessarily know what the process looks like over the offseason. Like, I was kind of excited about them taking a look at him, because I've been a fan of Weaver since 2019, 2020, somewhere in there. I actually wrote an article, I think it's called, like, Luke Weaver Developed a Third Pitch. And the pitch was the cutter. And I actually haven't checked to be sure, but I think that this cutter that he's throwing is the same version that he was throwing in 2019. If I remember correctly, the TLDR of that article is, you know, he'd been trying to find a third pitch for a while, and he, I think, tightened up his release points, was really able to locate it, and it worked really well. You know, now, like, if you look at him, it's like, okay, you've got a pretty stock fastball, I think kind of a lower release, but, like, not really any exceptional pitches. I think historically it's been the changeup. I think aesthetically, like, today it looked really, really good. And maybe that's because he's throwing a little harder. But the cutter, like, I'm looking at a list of, I think since the 23rd, which is the first day that he started throwing it this year, fifth in IVB. So he gets a ton of ride on that cutter. It's 12 inches of induced vertical break, which is, I mean, that's like Camilo Doval and, like, I mean, some of the names around him aren't the best, like Jameson Taillon, but it's better than Corbin Burns. The sweeper is a pretty, you know, I think, tantalizing pitch. The changeup was really moving today. Also, just, I mean, if I would have guessed, and I might have even said this on a podcast in the offseason, I wonder if he folds in a two-seamer as well, because I have a feeling he would throw a better, in terms of, like, stuff plus, you know, a better two-seamer than four-seamer. So it was really, really cool, you know, listening on the radio. And I think I heard them mention something about the velo being around 90. So immediately, you know, I hopped on Baseball Savant and was kind of looking at the pitch traits. But I mean,
well, to be clear, I'm curious, are you, I mean, I guess with hand, like, are you thinking about him in a starter context? Because, like, if he's going to be used in this relief role, I don't, like, do you see him using this many pitches? I know he did throw four pitches today, and it was over two innings, and everything was up.
Yeah.
And all the velo was up across the board. But I mean, again, he's clearly built up. Like, it's not like he's been throwing, he's been starting all season. So I think, I'm sure that was part of the appeal, is kind of a long relief type, which they haven't really had this season. I'm trying to think of who really has played that role. I guess Campbell a little bit, but not really. They have, I guess it was Flexen, right? It was Flexen. Right.
I mean, have they ever had a good long relief type, you know, that's actually, like, you know, people always say Matt Brash. Brash, probably
not
more,
anymore.
Like, you know.
I thought he was going to be that. I thought he was heading towards, like, and now it's just, now it's the opposite. Now it's like, we're using him every freaking day.
Yeah. And I
can't believe he's sustained it, and it's kind of terrifying. Yeah. But no, they haven't. They really haven't had a guy like that.
I mean, I think Brash is more likely to go out for one hitter or two hitters than for more than, you know, an inning. So I think he fills a pretty unique and really valuable role. You know, I kind of find myself thinking it might be like kind of a Kendall Graveman thing in a way, where it's just like, you know, he's pretty effective for however many innings. Is he for five or six? Like, I don't really know, because the fastball shape isn't that great. How many times can hitters see the cutter? And especially as the velocity dips, like, it'll inch more towards, you know, a more average cutter. Are the other pitches plus, you know, if he's not using the sweeper a lot? So I kind of wonder if he's just going to have, based on handedness, you know, if he'll shave it down to like two or three pitches per hitter. But I would give him go. Well, I don't know. I don't know if my understanding when they acquired him was that he was going to fill in for Hancock, and that's obviously not what happened thus far. But maybe it's just where they're at also.
If they feel good about Wu, then I don't think they wanted to go to a six man. So like, I think it's more that just like the length is a nice bonus.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine them using him as a starter. I mean, clearly he would be an obvious candidate if another guy goes down or if Wu gets hurt again or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's plan A. I guess the last thing I would say on this, and then we can talk about something that's not Luke Weaver.
How dare you?
It's just like, I'm interested where he slots in compared to Campbell and Thornton. And then I think the other guy that continues to fascinate me is Barroa, who's obviously more of a wild card.
Yeah.
But like, I do not think we've seen the last of him this season. I just don't. So that's maybe a bigger, you know, longer term question.
Mikey's holding out for Marco.
God, please.
Is Marco in relief?
The news did finally come out since the last time we talked about Marco that he's scratched for the season.
Oh, really?
Previous episode of the show, we talked about how Marco was down with an injury, but we really just hadn't heard any updates about him for forever. So we were like,
you were the only
like,
one who saw gone. The Marco update.
I mean, the real question is like, will we literally ever see him again?
Yeah.
Like on the Mariner.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. And I was thinking about the same thing the other day, as you do, you know, driving to work, thinking about Marco Gonzalez as I do most days. And my money is on the fact that we probably don't, but.
Text him, Mikey.
I don't know how.
It's weird because it's like, what the hell is his trade value?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, we'll see. I hope there's a happy ending for him in some form, but I don't really know what it is.
I really hope on the heels of an 8-game winning streak, our listeners came to the show to hear 25 minutes on Luke Weaver. No, I am serious though, because hey, they're not going to get that anywhere else.
I mean,
trust me, our listeners are excited to hear about Luke Weaver. We got some freaks that listen to the show. They want to know about Luke Weaver.
That's right.
But
it's my people,
as all good things must come to an end, we'll move on to talk about some other things. Jordan, you recently wrote an article at Fox Sports titled Five Keys to the Seattle Mariners Becoming the Hottest Team in MLB.
Mm.
It was a great article, so I thought we could structure a lot of our conversation around these 5 points that you made as a way to analyze how this team has been succeeding and also just revel in a lot of the success. I feel like when we have these moments where the team goes on, you know, such a productive stretch and everything's clicking on all cylinders, we have to just stop and smell the flowers and enjoy it. You know, your first point in this article is Minute Maid Park, a house of horrors no longer. You wrote, from 2019 to 2022, no team in MLB lost more games in an opponent's ballpark than the Mariners did at Minute Maid Park. To be clear, they went 7-30 with a -31 run differential. Don't let anybody from the Orioles hear us talking about this, but...
Damn, you should do his audiobook.
I was about to say, in the future, Jordan, you can let me know. You can read these quotes yourself if you prefer. I feel like it's weird reading my...
Oh, no, it's nice. No, okay. Like, it sounds better when someone else is saying it.
Jordan has a great voice.
That wasn't a terrible sentence.
I didn't know if it sounded weird having your own words read back to you. I'm just, like, telling you what you said. You're like, yeah, dude, I know. I wrote that.
It feels better than my own tweets read back to me. So this feels like more actual real prose. You know what I mean?
Right. It's like in a court of law, like having your tweets read back to you as evidence. Hopefully the day never comes, but you know, it's like, Mr. Schusterman, is it true that on July 21st you
stand
said this?
By I stand by this paragraph. Yeah, I mean, like, again, just to get into it, I mean, like, you guys all know, like, I think that sometimes fans exaggerate specific matchups, specific things to degrees that it's actually not. You're like, oh, this guy kills us. It's like, no, he's just really good. Like, sorry, that's actually not what's happening. It just feels like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Mariners in Houston have just been, I mean, it's just been miserable, right? And it was miserable in a way that they were like embarrassing the Mariners for multiple years. And then it transitioned to a different kind of miserable, which was last year's postseason. But this year, just the way that they've played, and I recognize that the Astros clearly are not quite the juggernaut that they once were, but you could tell just the way that both the Mariners played and the way that the Astros responded, like, this seems to be a real shift. Now, none of it really matters until they do it in October, but I thought it was impressive and important, and especially when you are trying to get back in it. Especially in the first, this is another thing. Think about how a big theme of the first 2 months of this season was beating the shitty teams and losing to the good teams. Mm-hmm. And to finally be winning, beating good teams on the road is really, and this has now been true for you know, over a month now, but like, that's a real sign, I would say, of progress. And clearly it meant a lot to the people involved, because they, you know, if you're Scott Service, you've just been getting your ass kicked there for the last 5 years. So I'm sure he enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely. I think act one of the Mariners' second half comeback came in the sweep against the Angels in Anaheim. And it really felt like act two now, as we're growing into it, was this sweep of the Astros in Houston. Mikey and Day, I wanted to, you know, ask a question to kind of like frame how we're going to think about this sweep in Houston. If you had to pick one way or another, did this sweep happen because the Astros are diminished or because the Mariners are ascending? Obviously, the truth is it's a bit of a mixture of both. But if you just had to pick one that was more significant, what would you say?
I think that the Astros are diminished. I think it's a bit of that. I think, you know, when you think about our hitters, like having a lot of, you know, right-handers and like fly ball line drive guys, you know, those are the guys that have really raked. And, you know, they are sometimes hitting like home runs that would be a home run outside of Minute Maid Park, which I just cannot stand. So I kind of think it's in part venue, in part like the nature of their lineup is a lot of hits and home runs are going to fall in, and then they, you know, might be streaky other series. But I would say it has more to do with the kind of lack of firepower on the Astros end. And, you know, obviously the Mariners pitching deserves some credit too, but yeah, we're far from a juggernaut.
Did you see what Maldonado said?
No, I didn't.
He called the sweep a slap in the face.
Wow.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, what did he...
Because I think the question was, I think, is what I read, you know, you could have gained ground on Texas. I mean, they're still treating the Mariners as like, oh, these are must-win games. Like, what are you doing? Take care of business. We could have maybe taken over the division. And I don't know, the slap in the face thing is like, what does that even mean?
It's funny. It's something about a slap in the face. It feels like there's like a disrespectful connotation to that, right? And I'm like, we just won some baseball games, man. You guys are going out there trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
If you didn't want it to happen, you know.
Don't play John Singleton.
John Singleton, like one for his last like 25 or whatever.
I was so excited every time he came up to bat.
It's cool to see him.
It is.
Yeah, no, it is. But I was like, excited like, oh, I thank mean, God.
I think actually, like, Jordan, you might have been starting up the Cespedes stuff around the time that he was becoming, like, you know, debuted. Because actually, oh, yeah. Dustin and I, like, I think we started the year that y'all did or the year after, maybe. It was early 2014 is when we launched.
2014 was his year.
Yeah.
So that was basically the second year that we were doing stuff.
Okay. So
it's actually funny that first 2014, wow, I guess he was probably on that team. Because 2014 was the second road trip that we did because we were doing road trips every summer for 5 years. And we went to Houston. That was, we did from our homes in DC to Texas and back, like through the South and a bunch of Southern Lake stuff. And the first interview we did was like the first, I don't know if it was the first big league credential we got, although it's possible it was, but it was in Houston for the 2014 Astros. And we interviewed Dexter Fowler, who's the man, and Chris Carter. Oh boy.
Oh man.
I mean, he was like the real, like OG, you know, Kyle Schwarber. Hitting 190 and, you know, hitting 40 home runs. But I believe John Singleton was on that team too. I don't know if he was there when we were there, but that, yeah, those transition Astros teams from like worst team of all time to like, that's really was that year. They only lost 92 that season was special. I mean, Altuve hit 341. So,
well, Chris Carter's only 36 years old right now.
Chris Carter's, I think, still killing in Mexico,
really?
I believe.
He's got some juice. Sick. He's
and
got some juice left.
Jose Martinez.
And Jose Martinez, yes. He is. But, I mean, Chris Carter's really, really killing it. I mean, he's got 21 homers in 54 games.
Whoa.
So he's, yeah, no, he's he could hit, you know, I'd bring him back for an honorary home run derby.
Yeah, why not?
The quick thing I'll say about the sweep, I think for me was, I think even through the original win streak or the one before this 8-game one, it the Seawald regret, I think, was pretty strong. And it was good to see Canzone, you know, I think what he had 4 hits. The series, it's starting to feel a little bit more like, okay, the trade wasn't the worst thing in the world. These hitters are coming through. Maybe they can play. It gave me more confidence in the team overall, I think.
Dang. Should we skip to number 5?
Yeah, excellent that you bring that up. We're going to go a little bit out of order now, but since that came up naturally, we'll bring up point number 5 in Jordan's article, which is trading Seawald is bending the bullpen but not breaking it. You wrote, with Seawald, the Mariners' bullpen ranked 4th in ERA at 3.64 over the first 4 months of the season, but in the 3 weeks since the trade, Seattle relievers have a 2.52 ERA, which ranks 5th, and their 3.2 FIP tops baseball. You know, if I could paraphrase your point, it seems like the bullpen is slightly diminished with Paul Seawald being shipped away, but the depth was strong enough that it's been able to, you know, some other players have been able to shuffle up in roles, and they've been able to, for the most part, retain their strength with Seawald being gone, especially with the addition of Luke Weaver. Thank you very much. So,
well, I was going to say,
right?
Yeah, I remember I wrote all this before knowing that Luke Weaver was going to be at it. So
right. That changed
a little different.
Yeah,
I will say, like, I honestly haven't even had the heart to ask Mikey about this Paul Seawald trade in the weeks since. So I guess I'll have the opportunity to do that now. But, like, I mean, from my perspective at the time, like, it, especially since I sort of saw it coming and talking to people around, like, no one was surprised, even though, of course, players like Cal Raleigh are going to publicly be like, this is BS, whatever. Listen, they were all up there for Graveman. It's not, and this is a much more extreme version of that, of course, right? But the front office has clearly decided, and you can criticize them for being in a situation where they needed to do this, but it was like just kind of a cold, calculated decision where this is how we're going to add controllable offense, and this is our best trade chip, and we can sustain this. That doesn't make it less of a bummer, but it does. It can make some sense. So I don't know. I think it's been a little tough to measure, because while I did trust the talent there, and I think that's been proven, it's still a guy short, right? It's not just a matter of you're replacing Seawald. It's just that, like, everyone bumps up and you can see it starting. And we saw it more this week in Chicago, even not in the blowouts, but, like, you know, today to some degree, there's just not another line coming. So now the reason, but also maybe there is, because they signed Luke Weaver. Maybe it is Baroa. Maybe it's another guy they're going to claim off waivers that they can. Maybe it's Bizardo. Like, who knows, right? That has to be part of the calculus, which is still not fun to see someone like Paul Sewell go to another team, but it is part of it. And now he's closing out the Rangers. So, you know, we're chilling.
Yeah, we did talk about it a couple episodes ago. I think two ago. I think at the time it really felt like a pretty classic DePoto like buying and selling move, but it's a weird, you know, it's just an odd kind of move to make when you're in the thick of it. And, you know, now we're, what is it, 1.5 games out of the division lead. Mm-hmm. And he obviously is someone that, you know, you really would like to have down the stretch. I really like Dominic Canzone. I think that's the kind of saving grace here. I trust that they see something in Ryan Bliss, and especially Josh Rojas, because I don't know if you heard this, Jordan, but apparently he was like the sticking point where like he had to be in the deal or it was no deal.
I saw that. Can I just?
Yeah, please.
Let me comment on that quickly.
Please. Yes.
I did not enjoy that on my timeline when it was like, we needed Josh Rojas.
Nor did
however,
I.
However, I will say that, like, obviously you pull up and you see what Josh Rojas has done this year, and he's just been one of the worst hitters in baseball. So what the hell are we doing, right? Mm-hmm. But it is kind of a funny mirror image of the Colton Wong situation where you're basically buying in on someone that has been terrible at counting on him to get back to what he was. Now it's a little, which was, by the way, like an extremely average hitter that can play multiple positions. And he did that for all of last season, all of the season before that. That is a useful player, like undeniably so. And the player that I think that they wanted to have in Colton Wong. And Colton Wong instead became the worst hitter in baseball, which people can criticize the offseason. But if you thought Colton Wong was going to become the worst hitter in baseball, like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't believe you. Like, I don't. So it's kind of like an undoing of that in a way that's like almost doubling down on a weird profile. But I get it. And of course, he's had some fun moments already, which is great. And I understand, obviously, more team control and arguably even more versatility and barely, but still more power potential as well compared to Wong at this point. So I like that. But Bliss is not an insignificant piece. And I think Canzone is, you know, we've kind of seen what kind of player he can be. And it's as simple as, like, I mean, unfortunately, like, I say you strip the emotion out of it, which you shouldn't, because the whole reason we do any of this is because we feel things. But ultimately, if I'm a front office, like, yeah, I'll trade relievers for hitters.
Yeah.
That's not that complicated. So I agree with everything you said, but that's kind of where I fall on it at the end of the day.
Jordan, you have a segment on Baseball Barbacast that crops up periodically called Why Haven't You Homered Yet? And now normally I think it's reserved for players who have, you know, more PAs than Josh Rojas had, or just generally are expected to.
He was near the top.
Yeah. Okay. No homers all year until he gets to Seattle 2 in the past couple of weeks. I mean, that's just proof that.
It was bizarre. No, it was great. And but again, like, it's not like Josh Rojas was the guy that doesn't hit home runs. Like, it was just, he was having a shit season. Which is strange, but I think that was, while I didn't particularly appreciate being like, he was the whole purpose of the deal, I think that's a little bit dramatic. I think that looking at him and being like, there's no way this guy's this bad, I think I am fine with that. And the change of scenery thing is real sometimes. So
I kind of think he was hurt because, you know, he was
also very possible
way worse than, you know, earlier this year than he had been in the past couple of years. In the past couple of years, he was, you know, a league average hitter, which, again, if you can move around the field, that's pretty valuable. So I don't hate it, but I think at T-Mobile Park, it's like, how many times do we have to watch these guys kind of, Colton Wong, you know, Adam Frazier, whatever. Exactly. So,
yeah, that's the part of it where it feels a little ridiculous to call him like a key to the deal, because I do think that the overall offensive profile is still going to be diminished hitting there. But I mean, hey, we've already kind of seen him, you know, have an impact. The bunt today, that got lost in today's game, but that was a fun moment. Yeah. So he's a fun player, and he's clearly extremely bought in, which is fun. So it's not like he was coming from a terrible team in Arizona, but that's been nice to see too.
Mm-hmm. One of the few players in baseball who has been hitting better than Josh Rojas over the past couple weeks is Julio Rodriguez, which is another point of your article. You say Rodriguez's 200 WRC plus since July 22nd ranks sixth in the majors, while his 2.3 F-WAR amassed in that span ranks second behind only Bobby Witt Jr. And that has vaulted him into the top 10 among position players for the season. To be honest with you, I'm a little bit disappointed that, you know, those numbers seem a little bit low relative to what Julio was able to do over that week. When you say his 2.3 F-WAR amassed in that span ranks behind Bobby Witt Jr., like, what is Bobby Witt Jr. doing here? I hadn't heard. I've heard about Bobby Witt Jr.
Bobby Witt Jr. is really good.
Didn't he just hit inside the park home run against us?
Yeah. He's raking right now.
Yeah, he has been good, but it's just difficult to imagine anybody being better than Julio has been over the past week or so.
And Bobby Witt Jr. is now benefiting from, his WAR totals are just skyrocketing because now he's suddenly a good shortstop defender, which. Right. If you can do that, your WAR totals are going to go up like crazy.
Absolutely.
The Julio stuff that is just obviously the 17 hits in four games is just laughable. I looked it up. I didn't end up including this. Here's a good trivia for you guys. Do you know what the most hits Ichiro ever had in four games was?
Let's
at least in the big leagues.
Okay, the three of us will go around the table. Mikey, you can go ahead and
start. He did it a few times, but there was a number. So
okay, and Julio did 17?
Yeah.
Julio, 17 and 4, which is a major league record. He is literally the only player ever to do that.
Yeah, so don't say 18.
I'm going to go with 14.
It's definitively less than 17.
Okay, my guess is 12.
I was going to say 13.
Oh, wow. That's perfect.
But I think it's surprisingly low.
Okay.
13 is correct.
Hey.
Let's go. Oh, that's
wow. I know that it's interesting. I'd have to go back and look at how many of those were singles. But that was the other thing about Julio's kind of run here. I think my favorite thing about this, and it also sort of explains it, is that he had zero walks in these four games, which is also part of what is, kind of scary and why Julio goes hot and cold, as we saw earlier this year. But it was amazing that, they all knew he was going up there to swing, and it didn't matter. He was he's so locked in. I'll swing at everything, and I'm going to hit everything. And it was incredible. And the fact that he can be a guy that can collect in a record number of hits and then also hit the home runs that he's hitting. And I've said this so many times. I wrote it in the article. I've said it on the podcast. I've tweeted about it. Him becoming a legitimately elite center fielder is just, and I know we kind of processed this last season. It is just it is so shocking. It is it has just changed the entire kind of complexion of the future is him just becoming that.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be, it just cannot be overstated enough. It is a huge part of why he's, and also just raises the floor for when he is struggling on offense, right?
Yeah.
You have a giant right fielder who's like an average defender who's going through the offensive slumps that he was kind of going through this year. That's not a good player. That's if the worst version, we should watch the White Sox. It's like there's a timeline where Julio is Eloy Jimenez. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Which at one point would have been considered a fantastic outcome. Yeah. Right. And I know Eloy's had a lot of other issues and healthy and he's whatever, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Like there's a version where he's just this giant right fielder. You hope he hits 40 homers and that's the player. Fun player, good player. That's the player. But instead he's going to steal probably 35 bases this year. And he's one of the best defensive players in the world. That's freaky.
It feels so good.
We are so lucky.
Hey, you guys remember Jared Kelnick?
Who?
You guys remember him?
Okay, wait. Jog my memory.
Wait. I want to know just your 2-sentence take on where he is at right now. Like when he comes back ostensibly in September, what kind of player is he right now?
I am super curious. I was going to bring him up when we were talking about Canzone, right? Because where does he fit?
Mm.
He was so good for 6 weeks that when he was really not good for 4 weeks, we kind of didn't talk about it, right? And so I don't know. I have no idea. I don't really know what like a platoon role would. No. I guess we've seen Marlowe struggle enough recently to where he could end up going back to AAA, mm-hmm. and it's just we hand the full time job back to Kelnick.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be fine with that, but because I don't know. There's not a platoon. There's not an obvious platoon partner available right now. So I think they're going to run him back out there all the time if he's healthy, which we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to it whenever it comes. I mean, we're clearly still a few weeks away, but it's every few days I've just been like, oh shit, like what's going to happen with Kelnick? And I think you guys can sort of relate.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Maybe Dylan Moore out and left field, but.
Or Lazaro Montas.
You mean baby Yordan Alvarez?
Well, by the way, that's another good talk about. There's someone I am not betting is going to become one of the fastest players in baseball.
Like Yordan,
I think he is going to. He is so big.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, he is so big. The Lazaro Montas stuff is laughable.
I see the highlights of him playing in Modesto, and it's just. It's not fair. It's like you know, your softball team like called in a ringer, somebody who like used to play like D3 baseball, and
it's me.
Right. Yeah, that's Mikey. That's Mikey on Dave's softball team, basically.
I am going to start asking around about this. He'd be old for the class, but he would be in this year's draft. As a high schooler.
Mm. Holy fuck.
He turns 19 in October. Like, I don't know where you would draft someone like him. I don't, like, is he a first round pick? Probably. Like, I think, yeah. And I know you could compare the signing bonuses and whatever, and you see what he's doing in A ball. I guess it wouldn't be fair to use that as a comparison. I think he would be a first round pick, but like, I'd still, like, would you rather have him or like Tommy White? Like, I'd rather have Tommy White, I think. But I don't know. Sorry. So far off the rails. But Lazaro Montes, like, I just, every time I see a highlight, I'm just like, what is going on?
No, it's all right. We like to go where the show takes us. You know what I mean? So if it takes us to Lazaro Montes, I think we're happy to be there. We're happy to be pulling into the station of Lazaro Montes. Point number four of Jordan's article. Julio is not the only one hitting. So we talked a little bit about the success that Julio has had lately, but it's really been a team effort. As Jordan writes, since July 1st, only the Braves, who might boast the best offense of all time, have a higher team WRC+ than Seattle's mark of 125. This is an excellent point, and I don't think we have much more to say than just acknowledging it. I also went through and, you know, used the same endpoint you chose as July 1st. And everybody on this team has a WRC+ over 100 with a minimum of 10 plate
That's
appearances.
Crazy.
That's just because I wanted to cut out Brian O'Keefe. But besides Josh Rojas and Teoscar, who are at 98 WRC+. So really, basically, everybody on this team since the start of July has been hitting at least a league average clip, which is insane. And, you know, I think that really encapsulates the story of why they have been winning so much in the second half. Jordan, do you have any thoughts on the non-Julio offense?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the whole thing, right? I mean, I think that, and that's kind of the last point, so I don't want to jump too far ahead, but we can also combine them. Like, the reason they're even in position to be where they are is because the pitching has been elite the whole time, right? Like, it was true for the Seawald trade, but the starting pitching, like, that's the whole reason why they even have a chance, because that is what was giving them a chance to stay around 500, which was maddening and drove all of us crazy, but it also meant that they weren't the Padres or the Mets, you know? Like, it never got that bad. But for the offense to all kind of start to click like this, I mean, it's basically been like the complete nonsense that we all start to believe in spring training when we all look at our lineup and we all think that the lineup is the greatest thing that we've ever seen. Every team, right? Oh, man, look at how deep this lineup is. And then other fan bases look at your team and they said, your team sucks. Yeah. Your lineup sucks. People look at the Mariners lineup and say, what are you talking about? Like Julio, like none of these guys are any good. And I would say that by far the biggest development has been JP Crawford.
Yeah, dude. Obsessed.
I know. And I guess you could say Raleigh has been crazy good the last month or so, but JP becoming like a legitimately plus hitter is really what, and I know he's not looked as good since he just came back this week, but that's what's really kind of changed the complexion of the lineup. Because to be frank, I mean, I know Teoscar was getting most of the shit because he was the big addition, mm-hmm. and I understand that, and he strikes out a crazy amount, and he's really streaky, and that's fine. And I just really like him, so I will stand up for him for reasons that probably don't matter. But the problem was that France and Suarez were just not very good for 3 months. That was really why this lineup just was so lifeless for so long. And, you know, we didn't notice early on because Kelnick was so good, and then we had a little bit of a run there, and then obviously Julio heated up, but that's the big difference. So now when you have enough of them, of course, Gino's been just an RBI machine, which, you know, you can make fun of RBIs, but like, guess what? They really do matter. You are, like at some point, it doesn't make him the MVP, but it makes him pretty damn important. And when you are consistently driving in runs, that means you're helping your team win games. Yeah. And you don't have to overthink that. Like that is a really big deal. And his clutch hitting, I think, went up a ton. And then the thing about Teoscar is like, he's just gone really hot and really cold. Mm-hmm. But like, that's also part of why you keep him around and not trade him, because they could have moved him too. And I think the decision not to move him for, you know, like a 40 plus prospect or 40 God. Future value prospect was a realization that like he can still really help. And we've seen that the last 3 weeks. And so I think the front office deserves credit for that too, because like that's a real decision that they could have easily made after the Seawall trade, and they saw that the value of still keeping him around.
Jordan, you're making me realize that counts. We bought at the deadline by not trading.
by not selling.
That's some mental gymnastics to get to that point.
No, I'm having an epiphany.
Far. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think let's
be.
Yeah, the Mariners front office would love to have you as a spokesperson, Day, if that's how you're going to, you know, be able to twist yourself into knots.
I guess the overstatement is like, let's be clear, right? Like the offseason was obviously a catastrophe. Okay. Like, let's not get out of the way. Like, but all the ones that ended up being disastrous, which are now gone, right? Pollock, LaStella, Wong, Cooper Hummel.
Jesus Christ.
It's not his fault, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Terrible, right? Embarrassing. But like, even when people were mad in the first half of the season, like Teoscar was really good in June.
Yeah.
And people were still angry at that point, you know? And so I just think that like that was the one that you just had to kind of keep rolling with. And he's going to still have weeks where he just strikes out every freaking time and you go crazy. But that was kind of part of the gamble that they were going to do with him. And I really am. I still think that he has a lot to contribute for this year. Not that they should bring him back next year or whatever, but I still think that that was a smart decision to kind of keep him around, because I think he's really important still.
Okay, we are running short on time, but I would like to close the book on this thought. I advertised 5 points at the beginning, so we will give them to you, but we won't really have time to go into this last point in detail. The final point is the strength is still the staff. So the Mariners starting pitching is really what is keeping us afloat through this run. Jordan writes, the Mariners starting pitchers rank among the league's best in ERA at 6th, FIP at 3rd, WHIP in 1st, and strikeout minus walk percentage at 3rd, and F4 in 4th. If anybody has any closing thoughts on that, please get them out now or forever hold your peace, other than they are great.
I think MLB Network just dropped a long video on, you know, what makes them successful, and a bunch of statistics that they rattled off where they, you know, rank first currently. I think, you know, it's pretty similar to the bullpen. It's like you either throw over the top like Logan Gilbert, or, you know, technically Bryce Miller, or you throw from a low release point and you're going to get pretty deceptive pitches. You know, really hope that we get to see the the best version, not Virgin, Virgin of Logan Gilbert, because I was thinking about this, Jordan, when you were talking about, you know, your Mariners fandom. I always want to write about Mariners, and they're not getting greenlit as much anymore. So I would like to find a home for my more Mariners.
And they're getting rejected?
Yeah. The first time it happened was the first, I think, week of the season. I wanted to write about Luis Castillo like a month after I'd written about him already and just say, hey, you got his fastball back or his changeup back and his fastball's better now. And Craig's like, dude, come on. We just wrote about him. Like, you know.
He's like, that's what your Twitter's for, dude. Take that to your personal account.
I don't know what I need to do, Patreon or something, but I'm getting the itch. So, yeah.
Can I ask one more question? Although I would love both your guys' opinions about this too. I feel like last season, by the end, and certainly as we saw in the playoffs, it was like, oh, George Kirby's just better than Logan Gilbert now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious where you stand, where all of you guys stand on if you still feel that way, if you feel like there is more upside in Kirby or more upside in Gilbert. This is it's not a problem at all. This is fantastic. But I am just curious as we compare these two, which we inevitably always will, almost in kind of the same way that we are sort of comparing Bryce Miller and Brian Wu, or at least I am, as we've kind of watched them be rookies. I'm just kind of curious where we'll move Miller and Wu aside for now. But in terms of what Gilbert and Kirby have shown you this year, are you more encouraged for over one or over the other? Not that it matters, because hopefully they'll both be on the team for a long time. But I'm just curious where you guys stand on those two.
I really, really love Kirby. I'm kind of biased towards, you know, his type. I love a command first pitcher that can just...
He doesn't get bad. He's throwing more strikes than anyone, like, ever. So
yeah, like the front hip, front door, you know, two-seamer against lefties. Two-seamer. One of my favorite pitches in baseball. But I think what I'd say is if you told me that Logan Gilbert would develop a plus gyro slider and plus splitty over the offseason, I would have said Logan Gilbert. And he just lost his fastball. So I think right now, even though Kirby's secondaries aren't the best, that his command is so good and the velo is so good that he makes it work. He can put his pitches exactly where he wants. And Logan isn't really afforded that, you know, that same thing. So I think he needs to get some spin back, however he was doing it before. So the fastball is just not quite the same. But if he went gyro slider heavy right now, I think he could be about as good as Kirby. So that's kind of my answer.
Yeah, love them both, but I take Kirby over Gilbert for the same reasons Mikey said.
We were just debating if Kirby was our new ace last week.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you bring this up because you know we're so high on Kirby that we were debating if we would take him over Luis, like, you know, in a one game playoff. So we love him here.
I mean that showing in game three last year was just,
oh my god,
man, oh man. That's, I mean, so cool. You couldn't ask for any. I mean, there have been fewer better pitch games by starting pitchers, right, in postseason. That we've had in 3 years. So, but yeah, you know, good problem to have. I think they'll, I agree. I also lean Kirby. And yeah, I mean, comparing him and Castillo is a different discussion.
But sure.
Castillo's still just, oh my God. Yeah. He's just, I know he's driving people crazy and people hold him to a high standard, which is fine, but he is delightful as well.
Well, that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jordan. Would you like to, plug anything where our listeners can find you?
Sure. So as you mentioned, Baseball Barbacast is the main podcast I am doing regularly, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We are, three times a week, which is super fun, allows us to cover a ton of stuff. We have a good time over there. And then, FoxSports.com, Fox Sports app, is where you can find all of my written work and my colleague Jake Mintz's written work. So you can check out that Mariners piece. I had a piece to go up today about Alexis Diaz, Reds closer, which I enjoyed digging into. Definitely some, not too advanced, but really, obviously, in terms of extension, that's a Logan Gilbert thing. I mean, Alexis Diaz is the gold standard right now. So enjoyed kind of talking to him about that. And that was fun. So, but yeah, those are the main things. That's where you can find them. Yeah, you can at @J_Schusterman_ is where I tweet about the Mariners. And I only do it when I'm feeling good.
Because no, some people don't. Just
bitch and moan. All right. Anyway, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, that is
was a delight as always.
Yeah, that is the sentiment of our show. So I'm glad you share it. Go find Jordan, read his articles, and listen to Baseball Barbcast. It's an excellent, excellent show. One of the best out there. So I have been Dustin. You can find me at Dustin J. Ryan on my socials. You can find Day at Dayshick Jr. And you can find Mikey here at _KuyaMikey. Find the podcast wherever you get your shows, iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And please, if you enjoy the show and you find it valuable, consider donating to our Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/NeverSunnyInSeattle. Thanks again for listening, and go Mariners.